Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, April 25th, 2016. Riek Machar is still a no-show, but his chief of general staff has arrived in Juba.
I salute the officers and non-commissioned officers and the citizens of liberated South Sudan. I arrived today, the 25th, at 3 p.m.
And an SPLM-IO spokesman blames the U.S. for Machar's delay.
We really deplore the move by American government. They withdrew their financial support for chartering the flights to Juba.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The SPLA-IO Chief of General Staff, First Lieutenant General Simon Gutwich Dwal, arrived at Juba International Airport this afternoon along with nearly 200 military personnel. Gutwich was expected to arrive last week, but his chartered plane was not granted landing permission by Juba. As Waki Simon Mudu reports from Juba, permits were issued yesterday for Gutwich and the chartered plane carrying First Vice President-designate Riek Machar to land at Juba International Airport.
Lieutenant General Simon Gutwich chants a victory slogan upon a landing in Juba. Dressed in a green military uniform, Gutwich disembarked the chartered plane with 195 military officers. Accompanying the soldiers was 20 rocket-propelled grenades and 20 machine guns, something the government and SPLM-IO agreed to after arguing over how many and what kind of weapons Machar's troops could bring to Juba. Speaking in Arabic at the airport, the SPLA-IO's top commander's message was brief and to the point.
I salute the officers and non-commissioned officers and the citizens of liberated South Sudan. I arrived today, the 25th, at 3 p.m. in the capital of South Sudan. South Sudan is one. The people of South Sudan are one. The president of South Sudan is one. Peace be upon you.
No government officials made public remarks upon Gutwich's arrival. General Marial Chenoan, commander of President Salva Kiir's Presidential Guards, known as Tiger Forces, two other senior army officers and two lawmakers received Gutwich inside the airport's VIP lounge. Machar did not travel with his top commander today, despite confirmation from both sides last week that the government had provided all necessary clearances for Machar to land in Juba. Information Minister Michael Makwei told South Sudan in Focus today that, despite the many delays, the government will continue to make assurances that Machar can safely return to Juba. Makwei says the government is ready to cover Machar's transportation costs to Juba after the U.S. and the other two Troika countries notified both sides that they would no longer provide chartered jets for Machar and his top commanders to arrive in Juba.
The peace belongs to us. It doesn't belong to anybody. And if this position is communicated to the government officially, then the government will act otherwise.
Makwe says this morning that so far his office has not received any request from the SPLM-IO regarding Machar's return to Juba.
Up to this time, we are actually lost in the mist. There is a breakdown of communication. There is no official communication that reached our end up to now on what plans do they have.
Last week, Machar's officials said the former rebel leader would only return to Juba if his chief of staff and weapons were transported to Juba. Makwe advised South Sudanese to remain hopeful.
Should not just give up and get frustrated and wait for him, Machar. We have been waiting for him all this time, and it is only a question of a few days and he will be in. Sure, within this week, Riek Machar will be here unless he changes his mind.
The South Sudan government says once Machar returns to Juba, he will be sworn in as the country's first vice president and join President Kiir in forming the transitional government of national unity as stipulated in the August peace deal. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
The spokesman of the former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, William Ezekiel, says the decision by the United States to stop financing their chartered plane to carry Machar to Juba will affect the implementation of the peace deal. Ezekiel says any punitive actions by the international community will block the road to peace.
Dr. Machar is supposed to arrive today as per clearance issued by the government of South Sudan yesterday. But all of a sudden, we really deplore the move by American government. They withdrew their financial support for chartering the flights to Juba. That is why the first vice president is not expected today. Meanwhile also, the Ethiopian government on its part decided to also suspend Ethiopian Airlines, which was supposed to come to Juba to bring Chief of General Staff for SPLA in opposition. All this happened yesterday evening. We have rescheduled the arrival of the first vice president, maybe tomorrow, if we manage to make a breakthrough in his process to arrive to Juba. Otherwise, he will not be here even tomorrow.
People have been waiting here for 7 days in a row. Every day we are told tomorrow, every day we are told tomorrow, and we are wondering whether he is really going to come.
Yeah, of course, you are right, 100%. And by the way, let us also be very specific. Who is hindering the arrival of the first vice president? Let us be very clear and very specific. Who denied first vice president designated flight to come to Juba? It is the government. Blame should go to the government. Government, I believe, is not so serious to the extent to implement the peace agreement. Even the flight, the plane of the first vice president designate, is supposed even to be shattered by the government if it were to be serious. He is coming, Dr. Riek Machar is coming to Juba. Number one, he is a South Sudanese. Two, he has a position, the second person in South Sudan, by virtue of the agreement. Then it is the government to cater for him. Why do we look for Americans? Why do we look for British? They are just supporting us. But actually, it is the government to do so. And the government is not meeting its obligation. Comprehensive peace agreement, which was signed by John Grant, it was sponsored by Khartoum government. They gave $60 million to SPLM to facilitate the arrival of SPLM delegates to Khartoum and the arrival of the first vice president, late Dr. John Grant. But why this government is refusing? As if we are foreigners, as if we are coming without even any legal or constitutional mandate.
The government will argue that they are broke. The country has not been having revenue from oil for quite a long time because of this fighting. The economic situation in the country is very, very...
Yeah, of course, financially, the government seems to be broke. But at the same time, it can at least look for this issue too, so that we implement the peace agreement. For the government to even to secure $1 million for the arrival of first vice president, if not 100,000, it can do it. Why the government is still buying arms to kill? At the same time, it's saying that it doesn't have money for peace.
With this standoff, do you see the peace agreement moving forward?
Of course, still I do believe and I'm optimistic that this peace agreement at the end of the day will see light. The peace agreement is started in a very slow process. First, this agreement was mediated and was imposed on all parties to the agreement here in South Sudan. Nobody negotiated. The government itself, President of the Republic, Salva Kiir, he asked for 15 days for consultation. And before 15 days, he called regional leaders to Juba to sign the agreement. And even the arrival of advance team was arranged by Troika. The government was not willing to receive us. We need at least the international community to be ready to guarantee this peace agreement first and foremost. Secondly, this international community also must take its task to identify the wrongdoers, those who are obstructing the peace agreement. They should not just confine themselves to condemnation.
That's SPLMIO spokesman William Ezekiel speaking today with South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza in Juba. The residents of Juba say they're frustrated by the failure of the warring parties to form the transitional government of national unity. They say the continued stalemate over the arrival of former rebel leader Riek Machar is creating confusion and anxiety. As Megumi Davis-Wakarind reports from Juba, some say they cannot afford the prices of basic food commodities as traders take advantage of the economic crisis.
Juba resident Tunis Luake says South Sudanese have waited long enough. She says President Salva Kiir and his former deputy should consider the suffering of citizens and form the government of national unity, which is well overdue.
It is making us to be on a standstill, waiting, hoping every day, and nothing is happening. People feel very bad because this is a stage that we are supposed to form it, to finish it, and then we go to a next stage, and it is not happening. So people are really frustrated.
South Sudan first vice president designate Riek Machar was expected to return to Juba on Monday and then on Tuesday, but was a no-show both days. After disagreements were not resolved over the number of troops and weapons Machar would carry to Juba on a chartered plane. Luake says market prices have doubled in recent days and people are living in fear.
It is even affecting me morally. Affecting me morally because I'm supposed to be free moving in my country. Even I want to walk in the streets the whole night until morning. I'm free, provide that I'm not doing anything bad. But now we are unable to do it. Me personally, when I come from the office, once I enter the compound, I go with my bread, everything. I lock the gate. I see the gate the following day in the morning. I don't come out again. So because the security is not good, you go out, anything can happen to you. So why should we say like we are in prisons and I'm in my own country?
Boda driver Wai Malesh agrees. Speaking in Arabic, Malesh says he's surviving on little income he gets from his business and is afraid to work at night.
Life is becoming very difficult. There is an increase in the crime rate. Thieves may kill you or your passengers if you drive at night. So people are just looking to survive. Our work has become more challenging than before.
Jennifer Kujang, chairperson of the Women's Union in Jubek State, says she's frustrated about what she hears on the radio every day.
I'm very worried because we are suffering, we women are suffering, the children are suffering, no food, no water, everything is very difficult. Let them really hurry up, let them form this transition government.
Another resident, Halima Michael Taban, remains hopeful that Machar will finally come and peace will prevail in South Sudan once again. She notes that the people of South Sudan endured much pain and suffering during the 21-year fight with Sudan. So they've been here before.
All people in South Sudan, let us put trust in God first. And we are believing that everything in this world has an end. And let them not lose confidence. And I know that he will come and things will change. But let us be patient.
Tight security was in place all last week with the expected arrival of Machar. Today, soldiers in plain clothes and uniforms are visible at many government institutions. UN peacekeeping troops were also on patrol throughout the capital during the early morning hours. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Is the University of Khartoum going to be sold off for tourism purposes? Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what stresses you out?
When I have so much to do and I end up procrastinating and leave everything the last minute, I end up being stressed out.
The economy that is really going to its end, we feel like we are finished. The economy is terrible and it's finishing me, it's stressing me.
I get stressed when I don't get my financial needs met.
Insecurity that we are facing here and there.
Too much work stresses me out, and then sometimes boredom stresses me out.
Currently, I study 9 hours in a day. and that stresses me out.
When I have a lot of work in front of me, and also there is someone need also to disturbing me, telling me something also to be added, you know, I feel more stressed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. A senior lecturer at the University of Khartoum says students and staff members should continue putting pressure on the government to stop the alleged relocation of the oldest and most prestigious university in Sudan. Reports surfaced 2 weeks ago of government plans to sell the property along the Blue Nile River, sparking student protest. Nabil Biagio has more from Khartoum.
The reports were based on remarks made by the State Minister of Tourism that the buildings of the university were now under his ministry and would soon be turned into tourist attractions while the university would be moved to Soba. Late last week, students clashed with riot police on campus and at nearby buildings where students reside. Dozens of student activists were arrested. Government Information Minister Ahmed Bilal denies the government plans to relocate the university.
This is not correct because based on a wrong statement from the Minister of Tourism. He was speaking about some historical buildings which shouldn't be moved by the government. One of them is Khartoum University, the Ministry of Finance, and the Palace.
Bilal says there was never any decision taken by the Sudan's cabinet to sell or move any part of the University of Khartoum.
This is misinterpreted in the newspapers, and then we get to these demonstrations. The correct thing that never any sort of talk from the cabinet about selling or about moving or something like that. No, this doesn't happen.
Bilal says there was talk about moving the medical college, which is part of University of Khartoum, but says those conversations were taken out of context.
Maybe some talks about moving the college, medical college, which is in the center of Khartoum, to be moved to Soba, where there is a big educated hospital there, and for this purpose. Just a talk. It is not a decision.
Ismail Ibrahim, a faculty member at the University of Khartoum, says the massive protests against the government's purported plans to sell University of Khartoum property sent a clear message to the government.
University of Khartoum has a very special, symbolic, national, psychological, you know, existence in the psychological makeup of the Sudanese. It is a symbol, one of the few and the rare and symbols of the Sudanese unity and pride.
University of Khartoum was founded in 1902. Throughout British rule and late in post-colonial rule, the university has been integral to the political and social development of the country. Many prominent figures in Sudanese history have graduated from the institution and have joined the teaching staff. Ibrahim says popular uprisings that remove authoritarian regimes from power is started on the campus of the university.
Whatever steps taken that by the students who thus demonstrated, or the members of the staff, or any other Sudanese that rejecting this, the very idea of removing the University of Khartoum, I think that this is something that is just coming, you know, spontaneously out from the deep, you know, respect and honor the Sudanese have in the University of Khartoum.
Ibrahim says despite the government denials of plans to sell the University of Khartoum, university administrators must make it clear to the public that selling any part of the university is off limits.
I think that the battle is not over yet. Yeah, we have to make sure that there is no such kind of decision taken at any level, whether at state level or executive level or at the legislative level.
Last week, violent clashes occurred with riot police on campus. The violence has ended for now, but students continue to protest and are demanding the release of their colleagues who have been arrested for participating in the campus protests. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
Also in Sudan, the Darfur Referendum Commission announced on Saturday the results of the three-day voting, which took place 2 weeks ago. The results show overwhelming support for keeping the current five states of Darfur. As Nabil Biaho reports from the Sudanese capital, the government says this puts to rest the question of how Darfur should be governed.
Official figures released by the referendum commission indicate that more than 3 million people voted in the Darfur administrative referendum. That is nearly 87% of the 3.5 million people who registered. Government officials say 97.7% of the registered voters chose to keep the current five states in Darfur. Ahmed Bilal is Sudan Information Minister.
This is completely now an end for the discussion about whether there is a region option or states. And this closed a big chapter.
Bilal says the results of the Darfur referendum will be incorporated into the permanent constitution to be drafted at the end of the national dialogue now underway in Khartoum. Bilal says his government's next priority is to remove weapons from the civilian population.
Now the next step will be disarmament of the Darfurian from weapons. This will take place maybe till the end of this year.
Bilal says his government is also launching various development projects in the war-torn region.
And this is also with the help of Qatar and will establishment of the Darfur Bank, Development Bank. Qatar will pay about $1 billion, and this will be completely for the development of Darfur.
Khartoum-based researcher Haj Hamad says it's no surprise that the results of the Darfur referendum favored the choice of the government, which is keeping the current five states. He says the entire exercise was a government affair.
The government was campaigning for their own choice. What do you expect? This is a government intervention activity, fully run by the government, from the very least soldier to the top president.
Rebels in Darfur and other opposition groups that boycotted the vote have long demanded the reunification of Darfur into one region with an autonomous administration. Hamad says the government's promises of securing Darfur ring hollow. He says the government needs to hold accountable its own regular forces and national intelligence agents who have been acting with impunity in the area.
If you are already using excessive force by your own security agencies, which is now unaccountable completely, and a culture of impunity is being developed by even participation of Parliament in changing the National Security Act.
Darfur was one region until 1994 when the current government divided it into three states. In 2012, two more states were added, totaling five states. The referendum vote that just ended confirms the five-state system. The referendum has been widely criticized by the international community for its lack of transparency. It was also boycotted by rebel forces in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says there has been an increase in the number of cases of malnutrition in South Sudan over the last 3 months. UNICEF officials have set up various nutrition centers across the country where malnourished children are being provided therapeutic foods. Magumi Davis Rockerind visited one of the centers and reports for VOA from Juba.
Several children cry as they are placed on weighing scales at the therapeutic feeding center at Asaba Children's Hospital in Juba. More than a dozen mothers have brought their children here to be examined. One of the children being treated for malnutrition today is 3-year-old Stephen Lotetio. Lotetio's grandmother, Cecilia Waka, brought her grandchild to the center. Lotetio looks pale. His skin has dropped rashes and spots.
When a child is having edema, we see the grade of edema.
Nutrition expert Orange Michael is examining Lotetio. Michael says most of the children who come here usually have some other complications such as diarrhea and malaria.
When the children come and we have already assessed and we found the child is malnourished, what we do, we give feeding. Now, that type of feeding that we give here, there's one we call F75. Which is F mean formula 75, which for starting up is stabilization phase. Now we begin with that 2 hourly and 3 hourly. Now when the child is appetite is okay and has improved, then we transfer the child to a transition phase where we now include we go to F100.
Michael says some children who arrive at the center are severely malnourished, so they have to administer therapeutic supplements through syringes or tubes. Waka says her grandson has a fever and has lost his appetite for food. She has brought him here while his mother takes care of other work.
We eat once or twice a day. Sometimes we have a late breakfast and then we'll eat our lunch at 2 or 3 p.m. and then that is it. If we have some little bread that has remained, we can give to this child. And it's usually same kind of food every day. Green vegetables and some beans.
Waka says sometimes they must make do with only one meal or nothing for a day. Paul Lole, a soldier and a father of five, has also brought his daughter, Christine, for treatment. His daughter has been sick with malaria and diarrhea for the past 2 weeks. Speaking in Arabic, Lole says he's glad his daughter is feeling better, but worries that when they return home, he won't have enough food to feed her.
You know how this country is. Getting food is very challenging. When I have some money, I buy some food for my family. But when I don't have any money, we just remain like that. We don't eat anything. We may spend days minus eating some food.
Lole says he has not received his salary for the last 2 months, which makes it nearly impossible for him to buy food for his family. Dr. Felix Nyungura is executive director at Al Sabah Children's Hospital, the only pediatric hospital in South Sudan. He says cases like Christine's and Loletio's are all too common. He says his hospital receives at least 18 malnourished children each day.
You know, the first 2 years is that is when the brain grows maximally. You see, when there is interruption in that very time, this child is not going to be very good at in future. You see, that is the problem.
In a joint statement released yesterday, UNICEF and WFP said the teams have been instrumental in averting famine as the number of South Sudanese facing hunger continues to rise. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
And we end today's show in remembrance of one of Africa's greatest musical treasures, Papa Wemba, who died over the weekend in Abidjan after falling ill during a performance at the Urban Music Festival of Anumabo. Here is Papa Wemba with the song Kolo Istwar.
Daddy Bola, Zilko Shabani,
Balaya Viva, Balaya Zanzibar,
Claudia Tienabo, Weke de Brisela, Natotolia, Anita Nidie, Giselle Dapoku, Nata Tindaya. Soki boko kakobo mamoto te, botika ni yango epela, tie kokufa.
Batanzaba mama,
Anna Benuti, Anastasi Baliba. Kala Diankuba Willy Kisombe
Kumele, 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 Madonna, Odadu, Odadu, Kumele, Madonna, Elande Samurai, Kumele, Madonna, Odadu, Odadu,
Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu, Odadu
been listening to the song Kolo Histoire by music icon Papa Wemba, who died over the weekend at the age of 66. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Le garçon du moment.